Welcome to Worker Movement, a podcast dedicated to the working class, a podcast dedicated to raising class consciousness. This podcast is for you, for us, for the worker.
We're going to wade into the depths of the terminally online left, where the biggest concern appears to be whether resources should be expended to force a floor vote in the House on Medicare for All, which is currently H.R. 1384 in the current Congress. And it's intended as a leftist show of force. The demands of this force of vote concept are as follows. We demand that every progressive in Congress refuse to vote for Nancy Pelosi for Speaker of the House until she publicly pledges to bring Medicare for All to the floor of the House for a vote in January. This is at forceofvote.org. I have no idea if this website is legit or valid or just some front group for getting people to sign up with their email addresses. It's super legit because it uses a Google form, so Google thanks you for your patronage and providing them with targeted voter information. It appears that the end goal of this is just to make some sort of handshake agreement that in order for me voting for Nancy Pelosi, Nancy Pelosi is going to turn around and have a floor vote on the Medicare for All bill. I don't think there's any procedural thing that can be, like, there's not a discharge petition or anything as part of this. It's just this, like, gentleman's agreement to have this happen. So we're just going to assume that whatever this agreement is holds up.
Wait, so the idea is that you scare somebody who has not seen power for like 20 years into voting for something that she is against by saying that you won't have power because for some reason the three of us are going to vote against you? Who's voting against her?
I think the intent, and I don't really know because I haven't paid enough attention to this, but is the squad in the House, which is supposed to be the leftist members of the House, Ilhan, AOC, Rashida Tlaib, some other group of people that were recently elected, I guess. Let's say it's 15 people. Like, the numbers don't really matter.
So we're going to do a little bit of math here. We're going to try to figure out whether or not these people can do anything.
So there's 15 of them. And I don't know that their actual individual people matter that much. But it's supposed to be the Progressive Caucus. I don't even know if these people have expressed an intent to even do this. But this is who the ForceTheVote.org people are targeting.
All ForceTheVote does is just collect names for somebody. I'm not sure who, whoever's signing up for it. To then target you an email for the future to ask for money, I guess. I don't know. I mean, it's a really good grift.
So it's a totally useless website, but does what they're pushing, the idea, the political strategy, make any sense?
Well, I'm trying to figure out how many seats are held by Republicans right now in Congress. And it looks like there are 222 Democrats and 211 Republicans with two vacancies starting in 2021. Well, actually a third because that dickhead just died of COVID. 210, I guess, on the Republican side. I guess difference of 12 is correct. But the real question is why some shit lib idea of forcing the vote for Medicare for All? I don't get it. Because all you're going to do is piss off Nancy Pelosi and she's just going to strip you of all of your chairmanships. I mean, there's nothing to gain here unless you go all in. So going all in my mind, is just going straight up. And I think this is a George W. Bush quote, nuclear, which is the total basically destruction of the Democratic Party by these 15 people by walking over to the Republicans and saying, we will vote for your Speaker of the House if you give all 15 of us chairmen of whatever boards you want. So it's basically back to basically parliament of some sorts, right? Where you have a party split off, they become independent, 15 independents, they go vote for the minority group, the minority group becomes a majority group. That's the only way that works.
So just to be super stupid clear on the math, there are currently 12 more Democrats in the House when the House convenes the new session in January 6th or whenever it happens. So 12 more Dems, and there are 15 Dems being targeted by this Force the Vote group. And so let's just presume that those 15 people are in fact going to stand together as a voting bloc. They would have the power to not vote for Nancy and perhaps go over to the Republicans and negotiate for some other speaker.
Exactly. Yep. Maybe you pick some shit lib moderate Republican. Maybe you just say we're going to go fucking Tea Party. Who gives a shit? What you have to have, though, when you do this is the power to actually get the Republicans to vote for you. And the only way to do this is to broker one hell of a crazy deal. And honestly, the only way this really works, too, is if you get this out in the media and the 15 people are holding hands, and Nancy gets wind of it, and the media gets wind of it, it actually might be a way to force a vote, I guess. But the way that the tactic is right now is what? That they're just going to, I guess, withhold their vote and what?
And what? Yeah, exactly. So what is the general purpose of this entire construct? It's an attempt to get Medicare for All passed in some way, shape, or form, right?
Right.
So if your goal is to get Medicare for All, is there some sort of bargain you could play by saying, I will vote for a Republican Speaker of the House, in exchange, I want to vote for Medicare for All? Like, doesn't that accomplish the same thing?
It does, and quite honestly, I mean, all Nancy has to do is walk over to the other side and grab the 15 most ardent anti-government Tea Party fucks and say, I will not bring Medicare for All to the floor if you 12 assholes vote for me. And I guarantee if that was negotiated, she'd probably get them to pull over.
Right. Capital's going to stick together.
Yeah, she might go to Indiana. The routes from Indiana, Ohio, Michigan, all the bluer, reddish states in the Midwest in which, you know, seats can flip back and forth. She might go to upstate New York and down into Florida and say, hey, guys, like, you know, you don't want Medicare for All. You won by barely anything. Vote for me for Speaker of the House. I won't vote for it. So really, there's really for this game of 85D chess, there's nothing here besides getting your email address.
The on its surface play here is absolutely a losing battle. There's no political strategy in which these group of 15 people don't get absolutely rat fucked, right?
In fact, the fact that their names are already on a website as the progressive wing means that if I was Democratic Party at this point in time, I might even boot them to the curb or boot 9 of them. I could probably name off half the people on this. Let me go back to this piece of shit website. I mean, if you were to say, if you walked around and said, I'm going to boot off Rashida, AOC, Raul, Ilhan, and then Barbara Lee, I'm going to kick them out of the caucus or give them nothing. The other ones are going to fall right in line. I mean, who the hell is Katie Porter? A bench warmer who has, like, no name anywhere. So does she want to lose her shithole chairmanship or her position in North? No, she doesn't. I mean, Nancy Pelosi plays to win. She doesn't think this is some game. She knows what she's doing. She's been doing it for a very long time. The only way AOC can win is if she were to get, I don't know, half of the major donors of the Democratic Party and half of the Republican Party's donor base to basically withhold funding from the Democrats and Republican moderates unless they voted for Medicare for All.
So it would have to be some sort of non-electoral play. Or a very specific electoral play where you're actually siphoning resources off of current electoral candidates in an effort to pursue some policy objective, which would be Medicare for All. And there's basically no demonstrated ability for anybody to do this.
Well, because Medicare for All isn't framed as a distributed tax on the middle class workforce in order to provide medical, which alleviates the stresses on business, because that's what it is. At the end of the day, under capitalism, Medicare for All is just a way for the capitalist class to increase your taxes in order to basically alleviate their debt pool.
Businesses would no longer be on the hook for providing healthcare benefits to their employees, and that reduces their bureaucracy and their general costs because it's deferred onto the government.
Yeah, and the only people that would be pissed off would be the private insurance holders because it's an investment. So she'd have to go after, I shouldn't say she, they'd have to go after the industrial versus the financial capitalists in order to really figure out what the major play is here.
I mean, just for the record, I think we're both supportive of Medicare for All. It's the correct leftist policy to kind of die on a hill for.
Yeah, I mean, it's the first step in removing capital from the equation. The issue will be that, you know, the neoliberal position for Medicare for All is that it's a government-funded but privately managed program, which is what you currently see right now. It's the same thing with student debt. The same thing with military. I mean, every single government program is federally funded, privately managed. You don't lose the jobs. You just basically transition jobs to a different workforce.
And it's a neoliberal idea where public money goes to private entities. But at the end of the day, it is providing accessibility and affordability to actually get healthcare benefits for the vast majority of people, which is why it's a good step towards alleviating capital's control over healthcare.
So at the end of the day, it's actually in the best interest of the shareholders, especially those that have money in private hospitals, to have a an M4A, Medicare for All, because that allows them to extract money from the federal government in form of taxes to pay for their profits. Because that's essentially what it is.
Let's say that a vote on Medicare is forced, like just hypothetically. Hypothetically, let's say they go through with this, oh, we're not going to vote for you. And Nancy's like, oh, okay, well, we'll do a vote for this thing that I am diametrically opposed to because I'm bad at my job or something. What actually happens as a result of a floor vote on Medicare for All?
What happens if you force a vote and it doesn't pass?
There are currently 118 co-sponsors in the House for the bill.
Oh, so 118 co-sponsors, you need 220-something. What the hell is the number you need?
218.
218, there you go. Thank you. 218 to pass this, so you're slightly shy of that number by 100. You have a lot of people who come from red states who are going to not want to put their neck out, and you're going to force a vote. And two things are going to happen. One is going to lose. You're going to lose it, and you're going to alienate and isolate out your caucus.
So you're 100% going to lose this vote, right? There's no scenario under which it passes.
Zero chance it passes. I don't even think it gets to a third of the vote. I mean, what you're going to see California take it. Your Republicans are always going to vote against it because it's their ideology.
Yeah, there'll be zero Republican votes for this.
There's going to be, you know, probably 50-50 Democrat votes because half the Democrats that get recruited are you know, millionaire doctors or lawyers, or, I mean, they're not going to vote for it. You have the urban areas that'll vote for it, but you're not going to have rural. What Medicaid for All is disguised as is essentially resource allocation. And it's never framed that way. It's never framed as a way to bail out rural America, in which we know that there are a limited number of resources, right? There's low population density. They have to pay more to get doctors there, and they have an ailing or an aging population. So what this comes down to really is a way to fund rural America's hospital through resource allocation. As this is resource allocation, it's essentially taking the tax money from urban areas and distributing it back out to rural populations. And it's real resource allocation this way. And it's a way for Medicare for All to prop up and help out the rural areas, which seem to be devastated by the fact that somebody gets sick and there's no doctor there to take care of them. There's no clinics there to help out individuals that have mental health issues or dialysis. They have to travel far to get the same care as somebody that lives within the city. And so framing it that way means that it's actually a great way of getting Medicare for All passed. But I don't think you'd ever get past the ideology of the rural America.
And rural America is largely represented by Republicans, whereas the urban centers and the suburban areas are represented by Dems. And I think the way this vote would play out is you'd get about half the urban Dems to vote for it, and you'd have the suburban Dems opposing it because they go back to their bougie constituents and they're like, I don't want to get taxed more for healthcare that I already have because I like my doctor.
I love my private insurance that costs me $800 a paycheck, but I get to choose the two doctors that take my insurance.
So it's not a great winning argument at the end of the day.
It really isn't. I mean, the only way it wins is to break the ideology down. And that's not how it's framed, because capital controls the messaging. And right now it's framed as we want to give the poor health insurance instead of it being equal access to health insurance. Shouldn't you say health insurance? It's fucking stupid. Equal access to health, to wellness, right? Changing the conversation from being the fact that you're sick, let's get treated, to how do we prevent sickness and illness in general.
So one of the main intents of, I think, this force the vote kind of media drive is to get people on the record as having voted for it one way or another. And I don't think that accomplishes anything, because you already have 118 people that are co-sponsors on it in the House, and nobody gives a shit. Like, who cares? There's a worthless vote on a bill that fails, that even if it does pass, this will never pass the Senate. Biden will never sign it, just so that you can burn your political capital, lose your chairmanships to vote on a bill that's never going to, like, come into being. Like, I don't understand, like, even hypothetically, in the best case scenario, what does this accomplish?
Yeah, it accomplishes nothing. It just alienates and isolates your fellow members. And in fact, it makes it so you're not trustworthy. Let's talk about game theory behind this. The people that you vote into office have to do the best job representing you, the constituent, but also being able and willing to be an effective leader within their caucus. And that means that if they burn their political capital doing dumb shit, like speaking out on the House floor or holding a rally against the Speaker of the House, they're not going to get the political capital they need to even try to remotely pass any bills. And that's primarily because the individuals that are in the House and the Senate were put there by capital through donations. So you really have an uphill battle, because under electoralism, it's owned by the capitalist class. and there's nothing you can do about it unless you mobilize everybody.
At the end of the day, this all boils down to your electoral power. Yep. And we saw in the last election cycle that the Dems have absolutely no problem going after several people on this list with primary challenges. Ilhan Omar, AOC, and Rashida Tlaib both had well-funded DNC challenges, and they crushed them.
Crushed them because their district wanted them, but that doesn't mean that they have power. It means that they have a voting population within a small district of between 150 and 350,000 voters, or whatever that number is, that want them in power. But they only have a few hundred thousand people potentially on their side. And that's three of them.
But those three individuals have zero risk of losing. They will keep Absolutely. Winning over and over and over. They will keep winning regardless of whether they force the vote or they're actually successful at this. They're being placed in government to basically perform for their constituents, right? There's only three of them. What power do they actually have? They have no power other than kind of grandstanding, right?
Yeah, I mean, they would have more power if they would have become governors of the states that they're in, or even secretaries of states of the states that they're in, or attorneys general.
So, right, these three people have no power at the federal level.
Right? And they and we talk about the stay local. They have more power if they basically hold rallies in every single county in their state to get other, I guess, quote unquote, progressives elected. They would have more of a block of voters if they actually just stayed home instead of going to Congress.
Like literally never go to Congress.
Yeah, and just stay in their district and fundraise for all the challengers around their state.
Go to whatever your lowest level House, Senate candidates are, recruit them, get them to run, fundraise, do a coordinated campaign with them. Literally never go to Congress.
Literally don't do your job. You just fucking go out and you fundraise all day long. You knock on doors and you mobilize people in every area around your state and you make your state as blue as possible, but beyond the control of the DNC. The issue here is that the DNC controls the federal elections for the Democratic Party.
And you're going to need more than 15 people to vote for Medicare. You're going to need more than 118 people to vote for Medicare for All. And the DNC functionally controls that.
And you have to break the DNC. It's the only way that works. The only way to break the DNC is to have your own fundraising capability or ability to win elections in different districts, not just your own. And we don't have that infrastructure in place. And so there's things like force the vote, basically just to get Jimmy Dore on CNN the next time they have to talk about Medicare for All. It's just an advertisement for himself. This has nothing to do with actually forcing the vote because there's nothing here.
This force the vote is largely a performative kind of media-based public relations drive. I don't honestly know what it's attempting to accomplish. It's trying to advocate for Medicare for All in some way, shape, or form. I'm not sure it's actually accomplishing anything, though. But if you're going to engage in some sort of performative public relations thing, like this doesn't move the needle in any way, shape, or form. Making your vote for Nancy Pelosi contingent on some Medicare for All vote that is not going to pass in any way, shape, or form is completely abdicating your power. Why not just not vote for Nancy, like, period?
Yeah, don't vote for her.
Why would you vote for her? Like, who cares? You're not going to win or lose anything based on it. Be performative. Make the news talk about how Nancy Pelosi was reelected as speaker, but eight people didn't vote for her. And challenge the DNC to come after your district again, and you're going to win by 70%, just like you did last time when the DNC wasted $10 million on a primary challenge.
And you're wasting resources. And in fact, the best part about wasting DNC resources is the next time, they're not going to waste resources.
Yeah, Ilhan, AOC, and Rashida Tlaib, they're not going to get a primary challenger next time, right?
If they do, they won't be funded as much. I mean, I think we had, like, Omar had some rando off the street that just already had videos up before anybody else in the primary even put the name on the ballot. I mean, it was a well-funded primary. I mean, it was to the point where you're questioning, like, wait a second, how do you have professional videos up for a guy who never ran before in his life? It's because he was recruited by somebody that gave him an injection of a huge amount of cash.
And then he lost by, you know, 20% or whatever. Wasn't close.
Yeah, well, he got smashed. He was a waste of money. But it does send a message, though.
Like, we're here, we're not going to support you with a blank check, and you know, we might not get Medicare for All now, but we will eventually. It's kind of I think what the long-term strategy has to be in some way, shape, or form. Because you're not going to get Medicare for All this election cycle. Like, you simply just functionally do not have the votes.
And you simply don't have the political will. I mean, we're coming off of Trump, who was a perfectly great president for Republicans, kind of. I mean, he fucked up a lot of trade money. But for the nationalists, he did exactly what he wanted. He propped up the capitalists that were national only, not the globalists, right? He went after all types of regulations. He got a tax cut in place. He did a lot of damage. And you have Biden, who is a neoliberal nonsense Joe Manchin candidate, who is going to come in and just basically return the country back to what Bush had, or Obama, who it doesn't matter, or Clinton. I mean, it's the same neoliberal idea, same thing. I mean, it's the same fucking president over and over again. They all go to war. They all bomb children. I mean, they're all the same fucking thing.
They're all war criminals, and you still have a large segment of the population without health care.
Yep, and it's not going to change. So what can you do? The only way that we're going to get Medicare for all is if we get enough states that run their own single-payer system. That's it. I mean, there's no other way of doing this until we have a challenge to the federal system of how money is transferred in and out of it. And the only way that happens is if you get your state to get a Medicare for all style block permit granted universal health coverage. And there's neoliberal techniques to doing this. It's advocating for increasing the poverty range. So instead of a worker needing to be 85% of the poverty range or 185%, you can say let's make that 500% or 1,000% of the poverty range. So someone who makes $195,000 a year still gets Medicare. Why? Because it doesn't matter. You charge them 1% tax, which is still cheaper than what they're paying now. So there's lots of techniques to do this. There's lots of ways of doing it. You just have to get active and get people on your side that want to get it done. And this is one of those grueling long hauls in which you have to have leadership, willing to stand up and champion it and fight for it and without distraction. Take the model of marijuana legalization, right? A very coherent fight in every single state that had a very coherent objective. That was what needs to happen at the state level for Medicare for All to happen, is to get so much pressure from the states to the federal government that the federal government has to act.
For future episodes and to learn more about the worker movement, join us at workermovement.com.